it's not like we are not doing HR. Just that for our size and for the kind of company we have, I just don't see the need to have a full-fledged HR department. What would the day-to-day be like? How many times are people leaving? We have a very good, you know, retention rate, by the way. People work with us for 2 years, which in tech is not, it's not so common, so to speak. Some of these roles are even developers, engineers, you know, that move a lot. So we have like some very good retention rates. I take it upon myself to build a very solid culture. So it's not like a one-off coach thing. So every single day, I do something in the company to just ensure that culture-wise, you know, we are up there. And everybody, of course, you can't get 100, but everybody is performing optimally. And when it's time to leave, everybody can leave, give us your notice period, you know, sometimes even hire your replacement and onboard the person.
Hi everyone, welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we'll feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. This week, we're questioning whether or not a startup needs an HR department. Many people were shocked a couple of months ago when Telegram CEO Pavel Durov revealed that his team of 30 engineers located across the world does not have an HR department, and his reasons happen to not be unique to him, although he has an interesting strategy around recruitment. Today, I'm speaking with Adewale Adeyemo, founder of a 7-year-old data analytics and edtech startup, Zacrack, who does not also see a need for an HR department. Yet, he reviews his strategies for recruitment, retention, learning and development, and other responsibilities expected of the HR team. He also gives out tips on how early-stage founders can keep their team productive and sustainable. Let's get into the conversation. Please pardon the sound quality. This will be improved in subsequent episodes.
So, Adewale, you've been running your business for 7 years and going now, and I'm curious, have you had a shot at entrepreneurship before you started Zacrack?
I had a company, you know, that I registered, an IT company, before starting Zacrack. I've also run a company. The first management experience I would have is running a water company, bought water company, you know, for my uncle of blessed memory. So that really exposed me to what the management side of entrepreneurship, you know, is like. Managing people, how crucial people are to any business, right? So that is some kind of structural entrepreneurship. The unstructured part, I've sold from bed sheets, you know, I've sold different things, I've sold cars, and all of these things just, you know, require people. For some of these micro businesses, it was just me. For a few of them, it's probably me and two or three other persons. But Zacrack is like the proper company, you know, that I'm going to start and that I'm still running today. So yes, I have, you know, experience with entrepreneurship before Zacrack.
So I noticed that you mentioned in your response, management, people. And I love that you mentioned that because that's like the crux of this conversation. If you want to run a startup, you need people to help you make it work. I think I should just go to the very obvious question. Why did you decide not to have an in-house HR or HR department in your company for the time you've run?
Personally, I always like to do everything in my organization. I like to do it or know about it myself. Or I hire somebody, right, to come and do it. We are still a startup, a growing company, but when we started 2017, we were way much smaller. I think we were 5. We were initially 3, then we became 5 and the like. So I had to learn HR myself. I had to learn like this. There are different departments in the organization. So it's marketing. What do they do? I'm very good in marketing. I love sales, right? Products. I have to, you know, do some learning on products. Same thing with HR. And I've always just known that, hey, business is just all about people. How do I recruit? How do I get the right people to know about what we're doing? How do we get the right people to fill the right roles? How do I keep these people? How do I ensure that these people are performing optimally? How do I ensure they are happy, right? And how do I also prepare for their departure? Because the only constant person in the company is the founder. Sometimes even founders leave. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. So right from go, I just I was so intentional about knowing the whole HR team. Now, why did I decide not to have a proper or a formal HR department? One, I would say because of our size. At the moment, we are roughly, say, 30 to 40, and we just sort of built a culture and a process, right, as the company grows. Now, a process to getting people to know about us, a process to getting people to be interested in working with us, a process to, you know, monitoring performance, a process to compensating people. It's just all about the culture, right? And as we grow, I just didn't see the need because I still don't think we have like a big company yet for us to like have an HR department. Some of the things that HR does, like how many times do we recruit in a year? How many employees are coming? How many employees are going, right? Performance management, what's our size? How many people's performances are we measuring? Compliance, what really do we have to be compliant to? When you remove AE, maybe NSITF and all of these things. So some of these things are things that we could get templates from those organizations and just plug in our numbers, plug in everybody's salary. We know how much the deductibles are. We know how much you go to pension. We know how much, you know, that we should pay to NSITF. So we just build all of this process, you know, into our business, right? So I share that role with myself and the admin manager. But the most important thing is just the culture. Most of what HR department should have been doing or should have done for us, beyond recruiting, beyond measuring performance, beyond compensation, is actually to build the company's culture, right? To make sure people enjoy working at Zakra, to make sure build, right, working here. I do not think that's the work of the HR, in my opinion. I think that's my own work as the owner of the division, as the owner of the company, for the size of company that we are. So I just took that thing upon myself from day one that, look, everything that has to do with culture, HR is not responsible. HR can come and go, right? The person that is permanent in the business. So I would just rather take up the whole aspect of culture, what does it mean to work at Zakra and whatever. So I think literally, it worked for us. Our size does not really require that we have an HR department. I think the HR department will be underworking, which is not good for a startup.
Yeah. So, many of the points you made are some of the things that an HR professional mentioned when I spoke with her some years back. She's the head HR for a startup. And she made a comment. She said, people don't really understand how important HR is. What usually happens is that startups get to a certain level and they start having HR crisis. And at that point, they are running around looking for HR professionals. She went ahead to mention some of the things she had to implement when she came into the startup. Speaking to some of the things you mentioned, you said you're the person that knows the company better to be able to promote some things. So are you trying to say that HR is overrated for startups?
So we do HR. Despite that, we don't have a department, right, called HR department. It's not like we don't do or we are not practicing, you know, those things. So for instance, the process of recruitment, we just don't recruit haphazardly. We have a process to it, right? From needs identification in the organization, right, to, you know, budgeting for that role, to calling for application, to, you know, what the process would be. So we have our own process in-house. We just don't pick somebody and say, hey, I'm a developer, come check out and say no. So there's a process to that, right? There's a process to termination. There's a process to performance review. There's a process to compensation. There's a process to leaving the company. There's a process to employee engagement. There's a process to ensuring, you know, employee happiness and all of these things, right? So it's not like we don't do these things. Fine, maybe an HR professional, being a professional, maybe that person will do it better. Maybe in our offer letter template, maybe an HR professional will still be able to probably bring out something that is, you know, maybe a loophole, right? So, but for all of these things that can be templated, like offer letter for contractors, offer letters for interns, offer letters for full-time employees, you know, all of the paper laws, you know, public holiday, gross net salary, notice period, you know, most of these things, we do them. And when I wanted to create some of these templates, I actually spoke with HR professionals. Some of these people helped us to draft, you know, these templates. And when we want to do something that maybe we don't have a template for, we do consult, say, HR professional who help us take a look at this or help us provide these templates. So it's not like we are not doing HR, just that for our size and for the kind of company we have, I just don't see it to have a full-fledged HR department. What would the day-to-day be like? How many times are people in? We have a very good, you know, retention rate, by the way. People work with us for 2 years, which in tech is not so common, so to speak. Some of these roles are even developers, engineers, you know, that move a lot. So we have like some very good retention rates. I take it upon myself to build a very solid culture. So it's not like one of them coaches it. So every single day, I do something in the company to just ensure that culture-wise, you know, we are up there. And everybody, of course, you can't get 100, but everybody is performing optimally. And when it's time to leave, everybody can leave, give us your notice period, you know, sometimes even hire your replacement and onboard the person. So but I just believe that as we grow, as we have more people in the organization, definitely at some point we would have an HR department. But right now, we don't. And it's because I just don't see the need for it yet.
You're making valid points, and to an extent, I feel it speaks to what you've been exposed to, your experiences, for instance, because you mentioned some of the things you had to do, consult with HR professionals, handling people, defining the culture and all. Would you say that you're an exception, or every entrepreneur, a startup founder, should be able to have like that skill?
So when it comes to culture, I think every startup founder, so look at startup like a family, look at the founder like the head of that family. I think the head of the family will set the tone of how things will be done. We set the tone of what goes, what does not go, you know, what works here, what doesn't work here, you know, and things like that. So I think every founder should be the point man when it comes to, you know, setting culture, you know, what kind of company do you want people to work at? I always ask myself, if roles were to be reversed, would I like to work at Zafra? Would I be happy to, say, carry my bag the next morning and go to work, right? I want to work in an environment that challenges me, where I can say, hey, I came in 6 months ago, and right now I'm better, right? I always prepare my team members for their next employer, such that when they leave me, their next employer is going to say, get more value from them. So I think culture cannot be absorbed. Even when you have HR professional, I feel like the culture is just like the soul of that organization. The culture is your identity, it's your personality. You can't take on, you can't outsource something that crucial to say, an HR person or an HR department. HR persons come and go. So does that mean that if this person comes, sets certain tone, and the person leaves, and that person comes again, and, you know, it keeps changing. So I think culture is your identity. I think culture is your personality. I think culture is the soul of your company. And yeah, maybe I'm too, I mean, emotional about my company. So, but I don't think I ever want to outsource that. And I also don't think it should be outsourced by founders to HR people. I don't think so. But I may be wrong.
So your point is every founder, every entrepreneur should have at least the basic skill of, say, defining culture and some responsibilities that are expected from the HR department.
Yes, 100%. I feel like HR is broad. Due respect to that profession is a lot. From the outside, it might feel it's not just to hire. Yeah, it might not just think. My thing is not, it's not just to hire, fire, and pay people. I know that HR is broad. I have HR professionals in my circle, and their work is a lot. Right. So, but when it comes to culture, culture is one of the components of human resources, you know, management. Or, but I feel like that culture part is the 100% work of the founder. I'll give you an example. I want to promote a culture of learning in my organization. Who is the best person to drive it? The best person is not the HR. And this is the way I've done it. I get to work, say, 30 minutes before my team members get to work. And I let them see me studying, probably reading related to my work, right? When I do that for 1 month, they come to work, they see it, they get on my table, they see it, right? Indirectly, I'm promoting the culture. So the next one, I'm going to tell them that, hey, you can't get better, you know, at your job if you're not learning, if you're not studying. This is what we have to do. Every day, every week, I mean, we have to pick 1 hour of your work time, not your break time. 1 hour of the, you know, the time you're supposed to use to work. I want you to use that 1 hour to learn. Now, learning to you can be taking a course. Learning to you might be, you know, reading a book, might be reading a blog, right? But because they've seen me do it over time, consistently. Now, this is not me saying, oh, it's part of your performance review. Oh, it's part of what you must do. You must take a course every quarter, you know. No. So that way, I'm able to drive that culture of learning. It's more effective. People are doing it out of their own volition. They are seeing the benefits. They are not saying, like, HR is forcing me to take a course kind of thing, right? So again, I'm very strong on culture, and I think culture should not be outsourced to HR person. You know, they can help you magnify it. They can help you do it at scale. They can help you now. You are 200, you know, 200 staff strength. They can help you. So, but that template, that identity, I think is the founders that should, you know, that should own it, especially in the early days.
So you've mentioned early days a lot. At this point of my startup, I don't think I need this and that. So when would you say is the ideal time for a startup to bring in a professional HR person or have an HR team?
It's a bit dicey. In my situation, maybe when we have a staff strength of, you know, 50 and above, and then we have a flat structure in the company. Again, that really helps us, which means that all the team leads, I sort of their performance review, they know what is expected, and they do the same thing, you know, for their team members. So right now, maybe when we hit 60 and I don't know yet. For my own business, I just really think that a lot of the fundamentals, including employee engagement, for instance, maybe when we have branches and all of those things, or we start having 40% of our employees working remote. And so, but like right now, I think we are good.
Yeah, an HR person will be listening to this, and because I've interacted with a number of them, and they've done their best to establish a case for a need to have a professional HR person, either in-house or on contract basis. But I leave you to have the conversations, if you're listening to this, to drop your opinion on how HR is very important or not important to a startup.
They are important.
So at what point? Okay, that's the argument here. At what point?
Right now, they're more important because, like I mentioned, they have just created some of the templates that we are using, say offer letters, you know, termination, all of those things, queries. So we just don't have a department. It doesn't mean that we don't have, say, inputs of HR professionals or experts in the organization.
Yeah, I get you. So going back to what that HR professional that I referenced the other time, she mentioned HR crisis. So would you say that in the years of running your business, would you say you've noticed any lapses in the people management, or if you've had any HR crisis or anything that happened that you felt that would have been prevented if you had like an hands-on HR professional?
Yes, I think I have a lot of examples that I can cite. Whether they can be prevented or whether we could have prevented them is another thing, right? Because everybody looking back, you always see what you think you can do better. I will give an example. So there was a time that we had this mass migration due to the Japa thing. People were leaving, right? And a couple of guys left without any notice. And they were not just showing up for meetings anymore. Then we were doing, say, this hybrid approach, come to the office a few days, online a few days. But they didn't say anything. I just started following up that, guy, what's up? What's happening? And stop. You're not calling for stand-ups. Just the boss, look very excited. I don't know how to tell you. I've gotten an offer and I've relocated. Could that have been prevented? Honestly speaking, I don't know. Why? Because there was an offer letter. There are terms to this thing. There's a notice period, you know. We have a very open culture. People can leave. We don't stigmatize people if and when they leave, right? In fact, for some people that have left, like deep preference or guarantee or something for them. So, but if you have an HR department or person in the company, I don't know how the HR person, you know, would have prevented this. Maybe the professional can now say something like, oh, because there's a breach of our agreement, because you didn't give your notice period, so maybe we can now probably do XYZ. Maybe we can go to a workout or something. Maybe we can get that employee to pay or something, you know, and like, well, in terms of outright prevention, I feel like at the end of the day, a lot of HR crises happen because of processes that are not put in place. So, but a lot also happen because of the people involved. Like, people are people, employees are employees. You really can't do so much to change people's personalities, right, or behavior. So, in that situation, I don't think any HR person would have prevented those guys from leaving. But what I think they can do, or they would have been able to do, is to probably say, hey, because there is a breach in this agreement, this, and this, you know, and the like, is what we should do. And, you know, consequently, maybe we shouldn't hire people, or maybe we should ask people different kind of questions, maybe we should get them to a contract. So I think, yeah, preventive, maybe not, but to ensure that doesn't happen again, I would say that in very big years, an HR professional would have been helpful in, you know, ensuring that it doesn't happen again.
And you've not had like any legal issue or compliance issues that would have been easily picked up if an HR person has been on ground?
So for legal issue, I'm assuming maybe an employee or ex-employee suing us, for instance, does that apply?
It's possible if you're breaking any clause in the employee handbook.
Well, not that. In terms of compliance, I think fundamentally is payee deduction and remittance, healthcare, if you have a staff strength more than 20 or 25, you know, and all of these things. Legal, I don't think we've not had any legal, we should not have to sue. Again, there are a lot of things that happen that we think, oh, maybe we should have pressed charges if we had an HR department and we have the resources, you know, to go chase after people and the like. Yes, so we've had something like that. But like being sued, it hasn't happened. But something that came close is that there was this program we did by the federal government there. They call it something COVID Survivor Fund. And what they were trying to do there was that they were trying to get small and medium scale businesses not to die. So they will help you, you know, cater for your payroll for X number of employees. So, but there is a cap to how much they can pay. So the way it works is that you submit your payroll to on that portal, and they determine how much, right, that they should pay the employees. And whatever they pay them is what the government can, you know, afford. You are not obliged to do any top-up, right? Because, I mean, businesses were dying. Government was just taking that problem of payroll off you. What happened then was that we had everybody, you know, submit their details, all of those things. And when we applied for that program, they didn't approve us on time. Then they wrote back and said, the payroll we submitted and the details we submitted. So you have to submit your payroll for the past 6 months to verify that, hey, these employees are actually on your books and you're paying them X amount, right? You are also to now fill their details, their names, bank details, whatever, right? For the bank details, I had a guy that fixed his girlfriend's account number. Maybe he saw it like free money and this is an opportunity for, you know, my pay to also chop, something like that. The issue is that the government came back and put us, there's duplication, there's somebody that gets so-so-so that is not on the payroll, you know, and stuff like that. And because of that, instead of approving for 15 employees, they only approved for 10. So we started investigating in-house, who bears his name? And at the end of the day, we found out it was one guy that added his girlfriend's account details to that portal. If we had an HR department, now this is where I'm going to be straight with you. If we had an HR department, I think HR would have probably verified that, look, the phone number or the account number that you are dropping on the platform, is it the same with what you've sent, you know, what we have on your record, what we have on your biodata, what we have on the payment system and all of those things. So I didn't verify. And because of that, instead of taking off 15 people's salary, they only took off, you know, just 10 people. Now, this is where HR comes in. I agree. That program, something also happened. When they eventually approved for 10 persons, instead of paying 10 of them 50,000, they were paying them 30,000 naira each. Maybe they saw that they are a fraudulent company. I mean, I don't want to go into... So, but the meaning is that 30,000 was what they approved by employee. Nobody had 30,000 in the company. So what I did was that I asked everybody to send the money, the 30K, send it back to the company's account while the company tops it up and pay you your actual salary. Now, the company could have just done the top up directly. So, but there are some persons that they were not even granted at all. So for uniformity, we asked those 10 persons to send the money back while the company tops it and pay their actual salary. Few weeks into that, people started talking, you know, a few guys in the company started saying the government is giving them free money and their CEO is chopping the money, something like that, right? Whereas we could have said that, hey, this is government initiative. Government has decided to take over the payroll. Whatever they pay you is what they can afford. The company is in a bad situation and we can't, you know, even afford to pay you. That's why government is taking it up. But instead of that, we are saying that, hey, government has paid you 30,000. Your salary is not 30,000. We are not going to give you what the government has paid. Send that 30,000 back. Why? Because it's not everybody that the government gave that money to. It's not free money. We didn't apply for it, we did. We didn't even know how the money came, you know, came about and the like. We just started saying, government is giving people money, so their boss is asking it to be sent back, you know, blah, blah, blah. I felt bad. I felt bad because I should have just let you take your 30,000. Since this is what the government, you know, program is about, they will pay you whatever they can pay you so that your employer needn't pay you again. But instead, I said, send it back, let's top it up and pay you your actual salary. If we had an HR department or an HR person, I just believe there are better ways that they would have handled this situation, either communicate to them better, explain what the program is, you know, better, and probably even sanction that guy that dropped his account, his girlfriend's account number. You know, was he punished? Yes, he was punished, right? So it's not like we let it slide. But if there was an HR, maybe it wouldn't have happened. They might have verified that what we have on our record is the same thing that has been concluded, right, on the government portal, and that wouldn't have happened. And most likely, the government would have paid more employees instead of just 10. And the money they would have paid more employees, maybe so most likely it would be 30K. So yes, we've had that kind of, you know, is it legal? Hard issues that, yes, if we had an HR, it could have been, you know, handled better. Yeah, I agree.
As we move to the end of this conversation, I want to ask if there are like automation tools that have supplemented or complemented your efforts in making sure that you fill up any lapses that the absence of an HR team has caused in the company?
Well, automation tools, I would say yes, a few, and also processes that we put in place. In terms of automation, one of the things that HR does every month, right, is payroll, deductions of taxes, and remittance of taxes. What we did was that we went to the revenue office, asked them to create a template for us. A template such that once I put your gross salary, it's going to compute your PE, it's going to compute your debts, you know, it's also going to compute all of those things. So we have that template from, you know, internal revenue, and we use that template. So everybody's salary, the gross, we just plug it in, your position, whatever, put all of those things, right, put it there. In terms of recruitment, we also have, say, defined process. For us, it's from need assessment in the department, any department. So, for instance, marketing department, they need, say, another graphic designer, right, to join the current graphic designer they have. We just don't take it. There's a level it has to get to. We have to see the numbers. How many content or design is your current person currently producing per day, per week, per month? What are the lapses, you know, and the like? So, we work it backward from there, then we do call for application. For call for application, the processes are also defined. So we give you a task, first off. Do that task, move you to the next level, you know, which is interview. If you don't do the task, we assume that you're not really, say, you know, interested in that job, you know, or something. So we just use that to screen people out. Of course, there's an initial screening before giving people a task. So but we'll give maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 persons the task. Then only those that, you know, completed and submitted the task, we actually get it. Because I don't have an HR team that will be doing interview. So I want to reduce the number of interviews, right, that I'm going to, say, hold with people that team leads will, you know, also hold. So that helps us. For recruitment as well, so there are offer letters that have been prepared, you know, by HR folks for us, for interns, for coppers, for full staff, you know, for, you know, all of those terms are there. Now, in terms of performance review now, this is not updated because there are roles that you can't really quantify numerically. Can't put numbers to it to say something like, oh, you attended to 50 customers. We sort of took this down to the team. So team leaders, they have specific week in the quarter where they have to do performance reviews. They have one-on-one, you know, with their team members, and, you know, they talk about everything that needs to be talked about. I do that too, right? I do that for the team lead and literally anybody in the company so can book a time, right, on my calendar, you know, to have one-on-one. So yes, automation, there are templates, there are softwares, you know, for doing everything that has to do with money, payments, you know, payee, gross net, all those computations. Yes, recruitment, there are processes also set in place. We know how it works here. If we have a new opening, we know the procedure, right? From needs assessment, call for application, initial screening, task, interview, to probation, to what we are checking during probatory period, to whether you're going to be confirmed, you know, or not. You know, we have all of those things defined and uniform. Across the company.
Yeah, that's cool. I know that you have processes in place. There was a time I explored companies' use of automations, and one thing that reoccurred in the conversations I had with experts was that if a company does not have like a current process, if they introduce automation, it's going to make it even more harder to do. So I know that you had, even in the future, if you're going to introduce automation, you have like a defined process in place that you can just plug into the automation. Thank you, Adewale, for how you've shared your insights so far. So we understand from what you said that it will get to a point where a company would have to bring in an HR team or a professional. Looking at the trajectory of Zach right now, looking at your growth in the past 7 years, if you look at the trajectory, how soon or how further do you feel that your company would be in need of an HR team?
Yeah, so what I was saying is that I don't see us, you know, escaping 2025. We're already starting to have some pains in the organization. You know, there are times we are recruiting for multiple roles, you know, from sourcing for talent, you know, all of those things. It's starting to be distracting or starting to, like, get too much for me and, you know, the admin person that is helping with this too. So I don't see us escaping 2025. The goal hasn't been that, or the intention hasn't been that we think we don't need an HR department. So we just strongly believe that this thing should happen, you know, as the company grows, as the number, you know, increases, you know, and the like. So I also care so much about people having actual work to do on a day-to-day basis. We're a startup company, trust me, we need to think about our resources, we need to think about, you know, resource allocation, we need to think about
what everybody is actually contributing, say, to the bottom line at the end of the day. So, but we are really approaching that point where we need HR service on a recurrent day-to-day basis, and other things being equal, by God's grace, I think by next year we should, you know, get to that point where we need to, say, bring HR in-house and make HR a team. I mean, it might be a team of two, might be a team of one to start with. So, but we are really approaching that part.
Hmm. All right. It's good to be honest with you. So let's just end on this note. If you have like any tips you have for others that are still in their first 2, 3, 4 years about how to keep a lean team, about how to decide who is very important to the company, what roles should be brought in. What tips would you want to give to startups that are just starting, or founders that are just starting, about how to keep their team lean and productive?
Okay, so I'm still early stage, but if there's one big advice that I think I would like to give to, you know, 1-year-old, 2-year-old founder, the success of your company is not measured by how many people you have on your payroll. There is no bragging right in saying that, hey, we are 50 people, we are 100 people, we have a team of, you know, 20 engineers. No, they are just bragging rights, vanity metric at the end of the day. So one advice I will give in respect to that is you have to be brutally honest with yourself. Do you actually need 10 engineers to build your MVP? Do you actually need a marketing team of, say, 12? You have somebody that runs hard, you have somebody that posts on social media, you have somebody that responds to comments and DMs. You have another person for SEO, you have another person for all of these things. Think about if you are unable to meet your revenue goals for 3 months, or if investment stops for 3 months, or if your angel investor stops funding for 3 months, would you be able to manage? Would you be able to run around? Would you be able to source for money? You know, however way, whichever way. So, but just be very honest with yourself as much as possible. The number of people on your team is not really, really, to me, again, my experience is not a map of the world, so it might not apply to everybody. So, but I don't think there's a bragging right in saying, hey, my team is 50, my team is 100. Has your business actually grown to a 30-person business, a 50-person business, you know, and the like? That is one. Don't get caught in this game of ego where you think the success of your business or your success as a founder or the success of your company is just based on the number of people, you know, that you have employed on your payroll, that you're paying. Don't overhire, especially, I don't want to say especially if you are not funded. Even if you're funded, right? Every single day, startups have, say, a higher odds or chances of dying than succeeding. So don't equate, hey, my company is paying 50 people. It doesn't make you successful. Look at the business itself. How many people can this business, you know, afford to pay? If we don't make money for the next 3 months, are we going to struggle with pay? It's normal to struggle. It's normal to also sometimes bring your personal money, you know, or even borrow money to meet your payroll. That's happened to me. I still do those sacrifices, you know, once in a while. So, but if you overhire, so imagine you actually need 20 people, but because of ego, you have 50 people. And now you have to go source for money to pay 50 people every month. How long can you keep light on, you know, before you call it a day? So don't get caught up. Just hire what you need, right? Before you hire for any role, always look internally first, right? And see if there are, you know, persons in the company, you know, that, or even you as a founder, you can, you know, do it. I'm about to do PA on some project of ours instead of bringing a PA. So also do your analysis. The need you have now, would you be having that need recurrently, or you just have that need, say, for 3 months or 6 months? Do you need to hire full time? Do you need to just bring a contractor for 3 months or 6 months to get it done, right? Like if you're building your MVP, for instance, you know, you're not funded, you don't have a lot of money. I think giving people full-time employment, especially if you want to pay some kind of salary, might not really be like a smart thing. You can give them, say, X number of months contract, build your MVP, and if everything works out fine, of course, you can retain them. So always look at your options. Hiring full-time is expensive because every month you are obliged to pay them. And even if you're unable to, say, meet your payroll, you are owing them. You have to pay no matter how long it takes. The second thing I would like to say is that people are your biggest assets. People are your biggest problem. As a founder, whether you are 1 year old, 2 years old, 7 years old, 50 years old, you can't build anything without people. So always think about that. The last thing I would like to say is that for a startup company or for a young, small company, so to speak, you have to agree that there are just some salaries you can't pay. Tech pays, you know, some kind of crazy money, right? But tell yourself that you are not Apple, you are not Google, you are probably not even Paystack, not even probably, you are not Paystack yet, you are not Flutterwave. Don't try to compete. You can't catch up, you can't meet up, right? Just hire at your level. You're going to grow into it. I think my first employee in 2017, I think the salary was 60 or 65,000 or there about that region. There's no way on earth I could have said, hey, I want to pay first salary when we don't even have any clients. Say, I want to start paying 300,000. So don't get in that game. You can't sustain it, right? A lot of the time when you use money to attract employees, you have to use money to keep retaining them. If you use money to like coach people, to lure people, trust me, somebody with a bigger budget is going to come take them away, right? And there will always be somebody with a bigger budget. So money is good. Pay what you can afford. Pay a good salary. But good salary is also relative for your level, right? If you don't have all the money, think about bringing interns. Think about bringing core members too. They will gain experience. They will do some work. Of course, they can't deliver like somebody with 3-4 years of experience. And maybe even at that your level, you also don't need the deliverable of a 3-5 years experienced person. Maybe, just maybe. Sometimes you do, especially engineering-wise, once your stuff, you know, to be solid from day one. So, but hire according to your need. Keep your team as lean as possible. Avoid full-time, you know, for as long as you can. Try to do contracts. If you do full-time and you're unable to pay salary, look, you are still owing them. You have to pay, you know, at the end of the day. The last thing I would like to say, and this is my personal advocacy, is that don't victimize people when they leave your company. Take your business, your company as your vision, right? You are the only person that is constant. Every other person, you know, will join you along the way. They will do their part. They've got to move on to bigger things. Sometimes they will leave you to say, you know, better paying jobs. People have got to make money. People have families to feed. So don't take it personal. Don't turn them to enemies. Trust me, they are going to help you, you know, somewhere in your future. They will refer customers to you. They will help you with recruitment. I mean, so don't victimize people. If people want to leave, have that conversation with them. The moment people are coming into Zakrak, I also tell them about leaving. Leaving is not bad. Leaving is part of the game, right? The only person that is constant is me and my co-founder. And even we can wake up one day and, you know, just throw in the towel and, you know, just let it go, right? So don't feel bad when people leave. Don't victimize them. I mean, they've just played their part. They've given you their time, their creativity. Yes, we pay them money for these things. But a lot of things that employees bring to startup companies, you can't even pay for it. The commitments, the extra hours, the ideas they bring, the creativity they bring, right? We don't have the top dollars to sort of compensate them for it. So for anybody that joins you on that journey, especially when you're not big yet, give them a kudos. If they have to leave, you can do a send for, do it for them. Appreciate them. No bad feelings. Don't cut ties with them. Of course, it now depends on how they also lead to. So, but as much as it depends on you as a founder, just make your company a sweet place to work and an easy place to live. You know, when that time comes, that people will definitely come and go. Just accept it. Don't take it personal. Your company is growing. Your company is evolving. A bigger guy with bigger money, you know, will poach your talents. Don't take it personal. They want better, bigger money. And they have to go. Some will get married and leave. Some will jack pass. Some will be okay. So, I mean, just try to be a sweet company. This also applies to me because I'm trying to also, you know, internalize and put some of these things in place in my company. So, yeah, in summary, number of employees does not determine or does not measure how successful. Drop the ego. If your company is just 10 people and you're making some good money, you are able to meet your obligations, your salary, your operating costs, pay your rent, your customers are happy, you are great. Look internal when you want to hire. Always ask yourself what you want to hire for. Do you need it recurrently or you only need it, say, for the next 3 months? If your answer is not, you know, please go contract. Give coppers, give interns a chance, right? Some of them will come and, you know, they will give you that stability. They will stay with you for 6 months, for 1 year, setting, right? Some of them will grow with you as your organization grows. So they will grow with you. Let people leave when they want to leave. Don't turn them to enemies. And please, don't get into the salary war. You can't win, especially if, you know, you're not funded. Even if you're funded, I feel like at some point, the bubble is just going to burst, right? Just own your journey. And when you get to that point where you can, you know, pay top dollars and like, I mean, I think you should. So that will be all from me. And hopefully it helps.
I'm sure it does help, and these are things that founders have to have in mind, even experienced ones have to kind of remind themselves at some point. Thank you very much, Wale, for speaking with me on this, and I'm sure you've been able to give out enough that will last anyone listening to this, that are very important insights that you gave out. Thank you very much for speaking with me once again, and I hope the next time that you will oblige.
Hopefully. I mean, thank you for inviting me to your podcast. First time on a podcast. So thank you so much, and I did enjoy it.
Yeah, you did well. Nobody would have guessed I thought you were first.
I just do have a thing for, you know, talking. I feel like startup is hard, and everybody doing it, I'm clapping for them. Sometimes we have plenty of advice in the industry. Everybody's advising. Sometimes I don't think I'm, you know, there or qualified, you know, to advise others. You know, and like, it's just tough, and I salute every founder.